From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. New Jersey decided late last year on a regulatory first to establish stringent standards for two types of perfluorochemicals in their environment. According to a November press release, the state's Department of Environmental Protection is the first to set maximum contaminant levels for perfluorooctanoic acid, or PFOA, and perfluoroanoic acid, or PFNA. You will hear the acronyms from here on out. Gen-X is one of more than a dozen similar compounds that have been present over the last year in the Cape Fear River, the source of drinking water for hundreds of thousands of southeastern North Carolina residents. Minnesota recently updated guidelines for fish consumption from six of its lakes due to contamination from PFAS. The fish, say Minnesota state officials, should not be consumed for more than one meal a month. That state also lowered the levels of PFAS in fish that it deems safe. The new guidelines advise people not to take any fish from one lake and to avoid largemouth bass in another lake in Minneapolis. The state has also revised its health advisory values for PFOA and PFAS. The reason? The new recognition, they say, these compounds stay in the human body for years and can increase with additional exposures. So what are those recommended levels? 35 parts per trillion for PFOA and 27 parts per trillion for PFAS. The Environmental Protection Agency sets an acceptable level of 70. 1 year ago today, the Star News broke the story of unregulated and potentially hazardous compounds in the drinking water supply, including Gen-X. This week also happens to be Clean Water Week, and today we're going to explore how far we've come on a number of fronts, including what we've learned about the impacts of these compounds on human health, what is changing in the regulatory world, and how local leaders are adopting new technology to clean the water. With us on this exploration, Jamie DeWitt. She's an associate professor of pharmacology and toxicology at Eastern Carolina University. She's also an adjunct associate professor of biological sciences at North Carolina State University. Jamie DeWitt, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for inviting me.
Jim Fleckner is executive director of Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, the utility serving New Hanover County. Jim Fleckner, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Also with us today, the man who's covered this story since it broke last year, including producing a documentary on the topic in December called Gen-X, A Toxic Year. Vince Winkle has gone from general assignment reporter to water quality reporter, although we still try to get him out on other beats, but I'm always so thrilled when he takes the time to join us on Coastline. Vince Winkle, welcome.
It's always fun to be in this studio.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. After a year of stories about Gen-X and questions about what's in the water supply, what are you still confused about? You can call us on this Thursday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Jamie DeWitt, I don't always like to start out with terminology definition, but we throw these terms around like Gen-X, PFOA, PFAS, PFNA. Can you kind of explain what we're talking about and how Gen-X fits into that vernacular?
Sure. These compounds are part of a larger class of synthetic or human-made compounds known as per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. We call them PFASs. Some people still refer to them as PFCs or perfluorinated compounds, but the preferred terminology now is PFAS. Within this class of compounds, there are about 5,000 individual chemicals. Gen-X is one, PFOA is one, PFNA is another, PFAS is another. These are all carbon chains with fluorines all around them. They're not found in nature. They are made by humans, and they're largely made for industrial processes. They're largely used as surfactants and surface protectants. So they're used to make other compounds. They're also used to make products that we all use every day in our homes.
So Gen-X is part of that class of compounds, and we're hearing about substances like Gen-X popping up in water supplies all over the country, New Jersey, Minnesota, as examples. Why is that happening?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. They're used industrially in many different factories, and many factories are not perfect in terms of containment. So some of these compounds slip out as contaminants, but some are legally discharged through various permits that these companies have. In some areas of the United States, water has been contaminated through the use of aqueous film-forming foams, or AFFF. These are chemical mixtures that are used to suppress high-energy fires. So they've been used at military bases and sometimes at airports. And these fire suppression training activities ultimately lead to some water contamination, which is a problem in some areas of the country, such as Colorado.
When we hear about the Christie administration in New Jersey setting their state standard for PFOA at 14 parts per trillion, Jim Fleckner, what does that say about North Carolina's health advisory of 140 parts per trillion? Can you explain why the difference, understanding you're not a spokesperson for the regulatory agency?
And I certainly can't speak for the state of North Carolina, but it does demonstrate the importance of getting national standards for these. Our drinking water is regulated at a national level, and that's where the standards are set, and that's where the expertise resides to make these decisions. So the lesson for me when I see states struggling to get information and struggling to set standards is that we need better guidance from the U.S. EPA on these issues so that we all have access to the most up-to-date information and the most appropriate regulations.
Vince Winkle, New Hanover County Commissioner Rob Zappel, who is also a member of the Board of Directors of Friends of Public Radio, recently told us that an EPA official at a conference in Washington, D.C., told him that a standard for Gen X would be issued sometime this summer.
Correct.
You reached out to the EPA to get confirmation of that. What'd you find out?
They didn't get back to me. But in, I think, June 1st, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, who has a lot of issues on his plate right now, stated that they would be releasing new standards this summer, which is kind of open-ended. It could happen next week. It might happen at the end of July. But we don't know what those numbers are going to be.
And Chemours recently asked North Carolina's Department of Environmental Quality to change its health advisory level. What can you tell us about that in light of these other states kind of clamping down and making more stringent standards? What is Chemours asking for?
Right. As you said, the EPA level is currently 70 parts per trillion. And in May, Chemours asked the state, the DEQ, to declare safe levels of Gen X in the environment at 1,000 times higher than that. So 70,000 parts per trillion. They said that there's no evidence demonstrating that that would be harmful to humans. So they have requested that they be allowed to do that. The DEQ has not responded to that request yet.
And I want to go to the human health impacts in a moment. But first, explain the difference, because in news stories we hear all the time, in stories that you report and produce, about 140 parts per trillion as the health advisory.
Right. That's what the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services set sometime last year, I think. They moved to 140 parts per trillion, and I believe they based that in part on some earlier rat studies, and also, as some critics will say, the number was chosen kind of out of thin air. There wasn't a lot of, my understanding is there was not a lot of science involved in settling on 140 parts per trillion, which is 10 times higher than what New Jersey is about to incorporate for their limit.
And the EPA health advisory again?
70.
So half of what the state of North Carolina allows.
Yes.
Jamie DeWitt, what do we know at this point about the impacts of these kinds of chemical compounds on human health?
So we have quite a bit of data for PFOA and PFOS. The US EPA has done a comprehensive health risk assessment for these two compounds. The Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry also has done a toxicological profile. I believe that their updated profile should be released shortly. And from these compounds and from the studies of these compounds, we know that there are associations of certain types of cancers in humans. Kidney cancer and testicular cancer in human populations have been associated with exposure. This is largely from a study of individuals who live in Ohio and West Virginia whose water was contaminated by a DuPont facility. If we look at some of the animal data and some of the human data in combination, immune system effects have been reported, developmental effects have been reported, and effects on serum lipid levels or cholesterol have been reported. So we see agreement between animal studies and epidemiological studies of humans that we see cancer, immunotoxicity, developmental toxicity, and effects on the liver and lipid levels.
We just have about a couple minutes before we go to the first break, but can you explain what you're working on and what some of the holes are in our understanding of the impacts of these chemical compounds on people?
The work that I do in my laboratory at East Carolina University focuses on the immune system, and what we study are effects that are similar to vaccine responses. So you give somebody a vaccine, you measure how well their immune system makes antibodies against that vaccine. We do similar work in my laboratory with models. But I'm also working with a large team of investigators across the entire state who are trying to answer questions not only about toxicity, but about presence of these compounds in drinking water sources, what it means in terms of people who drink these, how much do they get exposed. So it's really a multi-collaborator effort that's involving scientists from around the state. Currently, we're working with individual compounds, but because, as I said, there are about 5,000 compounds in this class, we have to find better ways to answer questions about health.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. It's a look at where we are 1 year into the Gen X story in the water supply. We have ECU Associate Professor Jamie DeWitt, CFPUA's Jim Fleckner, and WHQR's Vince Winkle with us. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from some of our listeners. If you're still confused by an element of this story, you're probably not alone. Call us with your questions on this Thursday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back, we're going to hear from Lee. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're exploring what we've learned over the last year about the local drinking water supply, what, if anything, has changed on the regulatory front, what questions you have about Gen X and similar emerging as yet unregulated compounds. With us to answer your questions on this Thursday, Jim Fleckner, Executive Director of Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, Jamie DeWitt, Associate Professor of Pharmacology and Toxicology at Eastern Carolina University, and WHQR's own Vince Winkle, who's covered this story from the beginning. You can reach us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org on this Thursday. Lee writes, my question is simple. Is the water in Wilmington safe to drink? For me, it's a simple yes or no question. If the answer cannot be one word, yes, then it is no for me. My suspicion is that there's still too much we don't know. Thanks for your forum. Jim Fleckner, can you tackle that? Yes or no, is the water safe to drink?
I have to say it's not a yes or no question. There are things in the water that we don't know everything about. There are things in the environment we don't know everything about. But I can say that our water meets all of the regulations that are set by the U.S. EPA and the state of North Carolina, which brings us to the real question, what we're talking about today, which is what is the impact of the other emerging contaminants that are out there that we don't know a lot about. And that's why enforcement is a key part of this. Regulation is an important part of this. And understanding what other chemicals are out there is an important part of this as well.
So I appreciate what you're saying. It is complicated because CFPUA, of course, has to abide by state and federal regulations for the water supply. But when you're talking about someone who's saying, if you can't say unequivocally it's safe to drink, then it's not. Can you see that logic?
I absolutely can. And I understand our community's concern, and I share our community's concern. I drink the water. My family drinks the water, and we need to provide the best water we possibly can, which is why we're taking the steps we're taking to understand our treatment options, to take legal action against Chemours, and also to research with the UNCW professors what other contaminants are out there that we as a utility and we as a community need to know about. So I absolutely understand and agree.
A lot of us thought this story would maybe fade away after a few weeks when it broke June 7th, 2017. The Star News broke the story. And by the way, congratulations to the team at the Star News that's covered this story. I think they recently received some recognition and award for that. Well-deserved. Adam Wagner, Vaughn Haggerty, and Kevin Maurer, and Gareth McGrath.
Mm-hmm.
Gareth McGrath. Vince Winkle, at issue both nationally and internationally, there's been a lot of finger pointing, maybe not so many solutions. But why do you think this story has stayed afloat for the last year?
I think part of it is the citizen activism. I think we've had at least two groups form here in the Cape Fear region focused on this issue. They've kept it in the spotlight. They sponsored some of the earlier meetings and forums, and they keep the public informed, like the news media does, on this story. And they have played a role in bringing it to the attention of legislators. These folks have traveled to events in Raleigh, and I think the residents of this region deserve a lot of credit for standing up and saying this isn't right, and we expect those officials that represent us to do something about it.
And this is probably a good time to just mention, as part of Clean Water Week, there are a lot of activities that have been happening throughout the week, and there's one happening this Thursday evening that you're moderating. Tell us about that.
Correct. Tonight at Cape Fear Community College in the auditorium in that main entrance. Jim and Jamie will be there, as well as Dr. Jane Hoppin from NC State, Dana Sargent from Clean Cape Fear, Dr. Larry Cahoon from UNCW, a representative of the Department of Environmental Quality, will be there. Chemours was invited, but they declined. And we'll be talking and taking questions from 6:30 to 8:30 on this topic.
Jamie DeWitt of ECU, I want to go back to some of the impacts on human health through the food supply. We've heard people in southeastern North Carolina voice concerns about produce that they're growing that may have gotten water that is contaminated with high levels of Gen X. People who have been concerned about eating the collards that they grow, for instance. We know that in Minnesota now, they're saying you can't eat some of the fish out of these lakes because they have high concentrations of these chemicals. What do we understand about that?
This is one of those situations where we definitely have more questions than answers. Very few studies have looked at market basket or dietary exposure routes. I'm working with a group of individuals who will be looking at that. Some scientists in Minnesota have done some studies of vegetables and have looked at uptake of various vegetables to see where these contaminants go and how much gets into the various pieces of the vegetables, whether it's the leaves or the roots. But this is an area where we have very little information. We know about water contamination, and we know about the source contribution of drinking water. But in terms of dietary exposure, we are lacking in information.
I think we've thrown around the term bioaccumulation. And we know that these chemicals accumulate in fish, right? We do know that, right, Jamie DeWitt?
Yes.
Okay. They accumulate in the human body, which is part of what you're studying through bodily fluids.
We look at concentrations in blood and in urine to get an idea of how long these compounds stay in the human body.
Okay. So what does that actually mean? Once you figure out how bioaccumulation works with some of these chemicals, can you put a timeline on it? Like, what is a safe period of time that someone could have been exposed to these chemicals before something starts to go wrong in the human body? Or is that a whole separate field of study?
Well, that's a complex question, and I'll try to come up with an answer that is somewhat understandable because it's very complex. So when we think about bioaccumulation, one of the questions we ask is bioconcentration. Does the compound move from the environment into living organisms? Once compounds move into living organisms, then the question is, how long does it take for those compounds to get excreted? Or do those compounds stay in living organisms and move up the food chain? We would call that biomagnification. Now, the piece that's really most important in terms of helping to understand the toxicity is that length of time the compound stays in the body, and we call that the biological half-life. Many of these compounds have a very, very long half-life. So PFOA, PFOS, 3 to 5 years. PFHXS, another one of those little alphabet soups, stays in the body for about 8 years. Gen X, we don't know how long it stays in the body. The longer a compound stays in the body, the higher the potential for it to interact with molecular pieces of our body to produce toxic effects. And so the big issue with these compounds is their persistence in the environment, their ability to get into living organisms, and the amount of time that they stay in living organisms.
Now, Vince Winkle.
Gen X was created because its precursor, C8, was shown to have a much longer half-life, as you might say. So they removed, removed an oxygen.
So they took it from 8 carbons to 6 carbons and added an oxygen.
Okay. So Gen X is supposed to stay in the body or in the tissue far briefer time than C8. Is that, in an ideal world, what would be happening?
So we have one study on biological half-life. It was conducted by a group of scientists from ChemOars, and they looked at monkeys, rats, and mice, and they determined that the half-life was a matter of just days or hours, so a much, much shorter half-life than the C8 compound or PFOA. But if you think about something like aspirin or Tylenol or some of the drugs that we take, they're out of our body in a matter of hours, 2 to 4 hours. So it's all about perspective. Yes, 3 days is short when you compare it to 3 years, but 3 days is still a pretty long time for something to stay in the body.
You're listening to Coastline. We're nearing the end of Clean Water Week, and a year after southeastern North Carolina stakeholders learned about Gen X and the water supply, how are we doing? What questions do you still have? Here to try to answer as many as possible on this Thursday, Jamie DeWitt. She's Associate Professor of Pharmacology and Toxicology at Eastern Carolina University. Jim Fleckner, Executive Director of Cape Fear Public Utility Authority. And Vince Winkle, WHQR reporter and maker of the documentary Gen X, A Toxic Year. You can call with your own question on this Thursday at 910-343-1138 or email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Joseph from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. I was wondering about the economic effects and how counties and city are spending their money. Recently, they voted unanimously to bring in a gypsum production company, I believe, which is going to be even more polluting. And I would not that better be used to bring more business in by cleaning up our water supply so that we have a more reliable and safer both domestic and commercial supply to the city itself.
Thanks so much for your question, Joseph. Vince Winkle, you've actually reported on National Gypsum, and we've learned some things about the environmental impact of this company, which is a little bit different from some of the other companies that had applied for permits from DEQ.
Correct. National Gypsum, which will be reopening its facility, which closed a number of years ago during the economic downturn, the criticism of them and the concern was that they used formaldehyde in their process of making particle board and construction materials. They were able to prove after several meetings that they have safeguards in place that really prevent the formaldehyde from once it's released in the air from getting very far past the fences of the facility. So they were offered a incentive to reopen their plant, and that was approved with both the city and the county chiming in terms of funds to help them open the doors. In terms of city and county efforts to clean the water, they've been doing what they can to pressure, the state officials and local lawmakers to crack the whip on Chemours and to encourage DEQ to keep after them. But it's not a – that's where your local officials are limited. They don't have the authority to shut down Chemours or levy fines. That's a state issue. Jim, I think I'm right on that.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Jim Fleckner, CFPUA is about to implement, is in the process of implementing a couple of different technologies to purify the water supply. Can you tell us about what CFPUA is doing?
Well, sure. Once this all came about last year and we were responding to it very quickly, the big question is, well, what can we do as a utility to filter the water better than we are now and treat for some of these compounds that the plant wasn't designed to treat for? So we've been testing various filter media, and we've pretty much completed our work and found that granular activated carbon is very effective at reducing the levels of Gen X and some of the other perfluorinated compounds in the drinking water. It's about a three-year process to do that, to build the plant, and not to build an addition to the plant. And it's about a $46 million price tag. So it's a big decision. It's an important decision. And that's something we're working through now with our board and taking input from our community as well. They can go to any of our offices downtown or at Government Center Drive or go to our website and give us input on their thoughts on this issue.
So that decision hasn't actually been made, that CFPUA will build the addition to the plant that allows it to filter using this granular activated carbon process.
We're in the process of making the decision. We're getting enough information together for our board so they can make a fully informed decision. But we do know that GAC is effective at reducing those levels.
Is it more effective than reverse osmosis?
We didn't study reverse osmosis as a pilot study. We didn't choose it as an option because we don't have enough raw water, untreated water, to treat with RO. There's a lot of wastewater with that process, and we just simply don't have enough water to do that in the future. We
You're
do now.
You're saying what CFPUA would be pulling out of the Cape Fear River.
Right. Our allocation to withdraw from the river isn't enough for us to get to our full 44 million gallons per day and treat with RO. The other part of that question is we've already invested a lot in our plant in terms of ultraviolet and ozone treatment. So our plant already does a great job, and we can simply add the GAC at a much lower cost than going to RO.
Do you think cost, this is an insane question, forgive me, but should cost be a factor when you're talking about what people are taking into their bodies with water? I mean, if you have potentially toxic water exposure to it over a long period of time and people develop cancers, then you can talk about economic burdens on the healthcare system. So should the cost load be up front or later? And is that something you're considering?
Of course we're considering it. Everything we do is paid for by our ratepayers. So we want to make sure we're spending their money responsibly. But your point is right on, because we need to provide the best water that we possibly can. When GAC and RO can provide comparable results and GAC can make good use of our existing investments, then it makes sense to go that route. And that was simply why we chose that option, not as a price comparison, but as making good use of our existing investments.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. We're talking about unregulated compounds in the drinking water supply nearing the end of Clean Water Week and what we've learned about Gen X and related compounds over the last year. With us to answer your questions, Jim Fleckner, Executive Director of Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, Jamie DeWitt, Associate Professor of Pharmacology and Toxicology at Eastern Carolina University, and Vince Winkle, WHQR reporter and maker of the documentary Gen X, A Toxic Year. You can call us on this Thursday with your own question at 910-343-1138 or email us today at coastline@whqr.org. LaVon from Wilmington, and welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hello, thank you. First, I'd like to thank you for the in-depth and fact-based coverage of this as part of the community. It is helpful.
Thank you so much, and thanks to Vince Winkle for that. We all want to cheer him on. He's done a great job.
Yeah.
What's your question, LaVon?
My question relates to the continued intake and it's a follow-up to Jimmy DeWitt's answer from earlier. I drink this water every day, understanding that it has a matter of days, order of magnitude, half-life in my body, per studies from Chemours. What is the continued effect of ingesting this water every day? Is that part of the research or study that has been data accumulated thus far?
I think if you look at the standard set or the guidelines set by DHHS, they've taken into consideration what happens if somebody drinks this water over the course of their lifetime. So when we establish contaminant levels and health advisories, these are typically based on consumption over a person's lifetime. And so that 140 part per trillion value reflects what is considered to be an acceptable concentration for somebody to drink throughout their entire life without an increased risk of any health effects. So if you consume at and below that level for your life, there's a low probability that you will experience health effects. There is not a zero probability, but there is a low probability because individuals vary and individuals differ. And it was also based on protecting those that are most sensitive, such as infants that are drinking higher volume of water per body weight than an adult.
We have an email. Ed writes, the NCGA, the North Carolina General Assembly, should hang their heads in shame. Their refusal to properly fund North Carolina's Department of Environmental Quality to perform their duties with regard to Gen X is making guinea pigs of us. DuPont Chemours, he writes, has known of the pollution and its effects for years. Their foot dragging and deception are criminal. And I know we're going to go to break in just a minute, but Vince Winkle, there has been a lot of debate in Raleigh over how to fund this, how to handle it from a policy and funding point of view. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, starting last year, they were discussing all this, and basically those on the Democrat side of the aisle wanted to fund and support more of DEQ efforts.
And I'm going to interrupt you and then ask you to kind of recap that when we come back from the break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. It's a look at the story of Gen X and the local water supply after 1 year of reporting. And as we near the end of Clean Water Week, ECU's Jamie DeWitt, CFPUA's Jim Fleckner, and WHQR's Vince Winkle are here answering your questions on this Thursday. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this break, more of your questions and comments. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today it's an exploration of what's happening with water quality, the drinking water supply, what we've learned over the last year since the Star News broke the story of unregulated and potentially dangerous compounds in the drinking water supply. With us today, Jim Fleckner of Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, Jamie DeWitt, Associate Professor of Pharmacology and Toxicology at ECU, and Vince Winkle, who has reported on the issue for WHQR over the last year. And we want to hear from you on this Thursday. What are you still trying to understand? You can reach us at 910-343-1138 or at coastline@whqr.org. It's the last segment. We have a bunch of emails to get to, so just a few minutes left to get your questions in. Vince Winkle, just before we went to break, you were about to explain the policy debate that took place in Raleigh over how to fund solutions to this.
Yeah, so the way the budget finally came out is, instead of restoring funding that DEQ has lost over the last few years, the General Assembly decided that they would fund a collaboratory at the University of North Carolina to the tune of about $5 million. And this collaboratory is directed to convene researchers and study the issue of emerging contaminants, but it has no authority to take any actions to address pollution, and they can't require Chemours to clean up its contamination. The governor last year had asked for $14 million for the Department of Environmental Quality, which actually was never even really discussed by the legislature.
Why was there this partisan divide?
That's a much deeper question. That's the million-dollar question. Let's just say that The General Assembly is currently in the hands of the GOP, and they have a different strategy than those on the other side of the aisle in terms of dealing with this problem.
Fair enough. Hap writes, as a new resident to Wilmington, this is of great concern to me. In a recent visit to family in Guilford County, the discussion of Gen X came up. I was surprised to find out Gen X may be a problem for the city of Greensboro. The Greensboro Airport is at the head of the city's water supply. They spray a fire suppressant as a routine to make sure fire trucks are working properly. Is this same fire retardant used at Wilmington's airport? Does a carbon filter work at all for these chemicals? Jim Fleckner.
I can't answer whether that firefighting foam is used at the Wilmington Airport, but I can say that our water intake is well upstream from the airport. So if there is any contamination at ILM, I couldn't see it affecting our water supply here. As far as the home filters, that's not something we have a lot of information on, but I know there's a lot of research out there that probably can answer those questions for folks.
And Amy is actually asking a similar question. What's the most reliable way for someone at home to remove these chemicals from the water?
Well, every time we've asked Dr. Detlef Knappe from NC State, he, I believe, has always suggested under-sink reverse osmosis as the solution for, you know, smaller projects like that. And that's you know, what I hear most of.
It's certainly an effective technology, absolutely. And on a small scale, it's a very, very effective way to treat water to a higher level.
And Sally asks a similar question. Is it advisable to get water filters to remove Gen X? Does it make a difference for the elderly, she asks. Jamie DeWitt, I'll let you handle that. Do we consider elderly folks part of that vulnerable population that could be more affected by Gen X or similar compounds in the water?
Absolutely. If we look at both ends of the age spectrum, those that are very young and those that are considered elderly could be at increased risk. The elderly are less efficient, just like infants are less efficient at excretion, metabolization, et cetera. So if you're older and are concerned, then you should probably think about getting some sort of an in-home filter, unless you are in an area where you have socioeconomic challenges, and then maybe you can reach out to some community organizations for some assistance.
For some assistance paying for?
For in-home filtration systems. They can be cost prohibitive for some
several
families.
Hundred dollars,
yes.
for one unit under the sink. Vince, you were about to jump in.
I noticed when I was at Chemours last week that before you get to the security gate, they have a huge white tent which just cases and cases of bottled water, which has been there. One of their solutions in terms of folks that live near the plant who have had a problem with their well water, where they found significant levels when they've tested the wells around there. So that's been one of their local efforts.
And Vince, we're going to get to your tour of Chemours before the hour is up, certainly. But first, Anonymous writes, when did CFPUA first find out about the presence of these chemicals? How often are they testing for all chemicals now, and are the numbers available every day on their website? Jim Fleckner.
Well, we've been working on the issue since November of 16, and early on our first response as a water utility was to research how else we can treat, what can we do to optimize our processes to reduce the levels of these compounds. Over the past year, our work really has shifted into more of a research mode, and we've been working with a lot of different engineers and university researchers to help understand what else is in the environment and what can we do about it. So one of the questions that we always struggle with is what else is out there and what is the combined effect? We all focus on Gen X. It's got an easy name, but it's one of many, many of these compounds that we know are in the river and makes up about 12% of those compounds that we've been able to detect.
So we've heard this term chemical cocktail, and when we use that term, what we're talking about is Gen X is just a tiny part of the rest of the potentially toxic substances in the water.
And that's right. That's why it's so important for us as we're talking about treatment options to understand which option is going to give us the best removal for all of these compounds and not just Gen X.
And we have a call from Richard in Carolina Beach. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes, I have a comment and a quick question. My comment is a friend of mine recently moved to Carolina Beach, and he has a young family. And part of his decision making in choosing Carolina Beach versus Wilmington is the Gen X issue. We get our water from a different source than the Cape Fear River. So I would hope that the real estate and development interests in Wilmington are paying attention and are involved in this issue. And my question is, I was hoping that you could go around to the different commentators and ask if you regularly drink the water in Wilmington, and if you don't live in the area, would you drink the water in Wilmington on a regular basis?
Good question. All right, let's start with Jim Fleckner. Thanks so much for your call, Richard, of CFPUA.
Well, I do live here, and I do drink the water, but like all of our customers, it's on my mind. Every time I take a drink, I think about it, and this is something that we're working very diligently on behalf of our customers to make sure that this issue is dealt with as quickly as possible and as completely as possible so that we can provide the best possible drinking water.
Jamie DeWitt?
I have a glass of Wilmington water right next to me, and I'm drinking it. I live in Greenville, and I drink our water, but I also regularly visit the Greenville Utilities website to look at levels of contaminants so that I can make personal choices about whether or not to continue drinking my own water.
Vince Winkle.
Well, you know, there's some great local breweries in Wilmington, and they use CFPUA water, and so I enjoy that, and the beer-making process does not remove Gen X or any of these compounds, and I do drink the tap water as well.
And before we move on to the next question, we still have some emails to get to and a call. Jim Fleckner, our anonymous writer, asks, how often are they testing for the chemicals now, and are the numbers available every day on the website?
We test weekly. For these compounds, and as soon as we get the results, and it takes about 2 weeks to get them, we do post them. And I can tell you the Gen X number is now bouncing around in the 10 part per trillion range, but again, that's just one of many compounds that we know are out there.
All right, we've got a note from Ed who says, when Gen X is filtered or removed from the water, what is done with the Gen X waste? Jim Fleckner.
Well, right now we're not very effective at removing it. A reverse osmosis system concentrates it and then discharges it back to the environment. A GAC system, such as the one we're looking at, the GAC filter itself, the materials shipped to a disposal site where they incinerate it. And it's my understanding that that breaks down the compounds, renders them inert, and then the GAC is shipped back to us. So that's one of the options we like because it actually reduces the overall load of these compounds in the environment.
So incinerating breaks them down, renders them inert, so that Gen X is not then being dispersed into the air.
That's right.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about Gen X. It's been a year since the news broke about that being in the local drinking water supply. With us today, Vince Winkle, WHQR reporter, who's been on the story for the last year, Jim Fleckner, executive director of Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, and Jamie DeWitt, associate professor of pharmacology and toxicology at ECU. Just a few minutes left in this discussion on this Thursday. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Scott from Sunset Beach, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
How are y'all today?
Good, thanks. What's your question for our guests?
Well, I live at Sunset Beach. Am I drinking this water with the Gen X as well, being that I'm in Brunswick County?
I couldn't tell you the Brunswick County distribution system, but I'm sure if you call them or get on their website, they should have a lot of information about it.
I understand. And the other thing is, what are they making or what are they doing in Fayetteville or wherever it is that's producing this Gen X thing?
That's a good question, Scott, and that leads right into a follow-up question I have for Vince Winkle. So Vince, we'll let you tackle that. Thanks so much for your call.
Yeah, I mean, Gen X comes from the process of creating Teflon, which is and other products that Chemours makes their fortune doing. They are introducing two technologies at the Chemours facility in Fayetteville as part of a $100 million plan. They say it's a $100 million plan to clean the air and the water discharges coming out of that facility. What we saw last week is one is a thermal oxidizer, which basically is designed to destroy all the Gen X molecules and all the other PFAS molecules through removing them from the air and then heating them up and destroying them. And they're also investing in a system to clean the water before it gets discharged into the Cape Fear River. Currently, they are shipping their water now to Texas, where it is used in the fracking process. So according to Chemours, they are not discharging any water into the Cape Fear River. They are instead 14 to 18 trucks every day, 7 days a week, take the wastewater to Texas where it gets injected into the ground.
Is that a temporary stopgap since they recently asked the state to increase the health advisory limit, increase the amount of, I may have misspoken there. They want to be able to increase the amount of Gen X that they are discharging.
Correct, while at the same time introducing technology in Fayetteville that they say by 2020 will remove 99% of Gen X.
So help us understand that. Why do they need to increase the amount that they can discharge if they're working on decreasing the amount that they actually discharge?
I don't know.
Vince, let's back up a little bit. You were recently invited on a tour of the facility, and this was after you'd spent a year trying to get comment from Chemours, and it almost became a comical exercise at the end of every story that you would do on Gen X. You know, you'd submit the script for edit, and the question would be, have you reached out to Chemours? What do they say? And the answer is always, yeah, I put in my few phone calls. And, you know, and finally, after a year, what happened?
They've changed their strategy. I think that there have been some changes at their corporate headquarters, which are also in Wilmington, but that's the Wilmington in Delaware. They are pushing to become more transparent. They are rolling out town meetings for residents to attend. The first one is next week, June 12th. And so now they're bringing the media in to actually grant interviews. Last week it was Adam Wagner of the Star News and myself. This week, WRAL out of Raleigh and the Fayetteville Observer, where they show us the new technology they're building and give us a tour and talk about all the work they're doing to clean up their operation.
Moody's Investor Service, the ratings organization, actually determined that Chemours and DuPont are at an increased risk from litigation in both North Carolina and Ohio due to contamination from PFCs. This analysis actually came out in March, and Jim Fleckner, Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, actually filed a complaint last October. Before we get to what Vince is going to tell us about the most recent earnings of Chemours, can you explain what your complaint alleges?
Well, sure. We have taken legal action against Chemours and DuPont. And one of the most recent things we've been working on is trying to get on the plant site to get samples of their process water so we can determine, test for it, what else they're producing, what are the concentrations of these contaminants, and that will help us design our plant better if we know what's up there. A judge recently ordered Chemours to allow us on site to take these samples. We haven't done that yet. We're doing that over the next few weeks. So it's been a long process to work with them to try to get as much information as we can. Meanwhile, our lawsuit against Chemours does continue through the court system.
What's the next step?
The next step is for the attorneys to continue their work with discovery. We're not there yet. It's in the beginning phases of the legal process.
And Vince, how is the company doing with this increased risk of litigation?
Well, the first quarter numbers that we got last month, they had net sales of $1.7 billion with a B. They are making almost 100% more than they were making a year ago.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Vince Winkle, Jamie DeWitt, Jim Fleckner, thank you all for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caroline DeVries is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast, find it on the WHQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.